Game On 2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Thanks to the superstar Jenny Green for dragging us over the hump of the week. It's Wednesday, the 21st of April.
Coming up on Game On tonight, Gary Rogers joins us to discuss a very competitive start to the League of Ireland as we pore over the wreckage that currently is European club football.
Overlap on the left-hand side, 1-2. Is it going to fall kindly for Parks? It is. Kenny's behind him. Gibson calling for it. The volley from Gibson! And what a goal that is! Bulger plays it infield. Chance for the shot here. Oh, it's an absolute rocket! An absolute rocket of a goal by David Cawley.
We ask Clare's John Conlon what it's like to be back training.
Aaron Cunningham scoops it up for Clare. Kelly is running inside. He's on the 20, on the 13. There's a chance of a goal. And there it is. Tony Kelly peels away in celebration. As soon as he got the sniff of goal in his nostrils, he went for it. And Clare right back in business here.
Look how happy you are.
You love to hear it, Donica. Sports nutritionist Orla Walsh tells us how we can fuel ourselves properly as we restart training.
Play producer Andrew O'Connell. We also chat with one of Leinster's finest. Alan Lewis tells us about the catastrophe facing one of Ireland's oldest and most successful cricket clubs.
Yeah! Bowl in, and Ireland win the ICC World 2020 qualifying event.
Now you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM if you want to get in touch. Please do. We'd love to hear from you, and we're going to tell you about our big competition in just a second.
Game on 2FM.
How are we doing, Marie? There is good excitement around the place. I'm sure you're a bit like me. Every WhatsApp group that you're involved with either your kid's sport or your own sport is dusting itself down, and it's getting lively once again. So we have a brilliant prize tonight with thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Green Firm. They have a brilliant goodie bag full of great prizes and some of their amazing products. So we'll be chatting to Orla Walsh a little bit later on. So we want people to get involved. And it's quite simple, returning to training, returning to playing, how to fuel your body to get the best out of it. So if you've any questions, please do get them into us on 51552, or you can tweet us at GameOn2FM. I think it's probably an interest to everyone now that you'd probably want to get the most out of yourself when you do train, or how best to go about it. So looking forward to chatting to Orla about that very shortly.
Definitely, Donegan. I think it does feel like there's a bit of change in the air. You can just sense it around the place. People are out more. There's a lot more activity. We know that training is coming back for kids, which means adults are going to be out and about a lot more, whether it's just walking around while their kids train. We're known that inter-county teams are back training. So eventually, everybody's going to be back full training. So this is the time really to get ourselves together. I've got my Absolutions gym top on. I'm ready to go. I'm inspired. I think that now is a really good time to just to get back on track, because it has been a tough few months. And I think, like a lot of people, will have probably made the wrong choices. It was winter time. We were in a pandemic. Everything was shut down and we weren't eating right and we weren't doing our exercise. But now that the weather is back nice again, and it feels like we're starting to come out of it. We've no excuses now.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there was excuses there. You couldn't go, you know what I mean? You couldn't go to the gym. You probably still can't, but there is, you know, you don't want to take any of that. But small changes make a massive difference, Marie. And hopefully we can chat to Orla shortly about all that. So do keep your questions coming in. 51552 if you're interested in fueling your performance over the next few weeks and looking to nutrition to be the main bedrock for it, please do get in touch.
Because we have to start somewhere, so we might as well start now today after listening to Orla. So we are going to turn our attention now to the European Super League. And a day is a very short time, it seems, in the world of sport and particularly in the world of football, because since we spoke yesterday, the European Super League has completely unravelled. It is going to be no more. So all of the six Premier League clubs all pulled out overnight, and then Real Madrid and Barcelona have remained quiet, but Atletico Madrid is one that has gone as well, and it's going to be no more. And after all of the I suppose the outrage really is probably the best way to put it, Donica, because that's what it was.
It was incredible drama, Marie, hasn't it? It's been incredible drama since Sunday. And just how fans have taken back the game, really, isn't it? You know, everyone just basically stood up and just said, no, this isn't happening, you know, from... And look, I know we've spoken an awful lot about the players involved, but I think as well, when you're this side of it, you see the value in punditry and having people, you know, come out and say, no, this isn't on, and protect what they love. You wish people got as passionate, as involved in different things, you know, just, you know, would help it out in other sides of life and society. If we could mobilise like that, like we do for sport, it would be incredible.
Yeah, that's for sure. Now, Gary Rogers, former professional footballer, joins us on the line. Look, Gary, a lot has happened in the last couple of days. It's almost at times hard to make sense of it, really, and hard to keep up with it because the story has changed so much. But what are your thoughts on how it all played out?
Yeah, well, it changes very quickly, and that's football. And I think, you know, in the space of 2 days, it's been a complete U-turn from clubs and everyone involved. And like Dunica says there, it just goes to show the power of you say, the ex-pros and the fans, you know, that they really kind of put their hand up and said, this is not on, and they're not going to stand for it. And I suppose, like, it possibly shows the owners, how far the owners are removed from the fans, because I think that they were able to railroad this in without even considering the fans. It's just beyond belief.
It really is. I was listening to John Henry, the Liverpool owner, talking today, and I just found it hard to comprehend how him and any of them really could have thought it would be a good idea, and also how they could take it so far without canvassing the most important people, which are the fans.
Yeah, and they certainly weren't, you know, a consideration at all. Like you say, it does seem like they just thought that, you know, because of the clubs that they are and the status that they have, that they would be able to kind of push this through and take the lion's share of the money and keep it, you know, amongst themselves, really. And look, the most worrying thing about, you know, the Super League for me was the lack of competition. Like, you know, how can you have, you know, a competitive competition where you can't be relegated? Like, you know, that's just, it goes against the grain, it goes against what football is about. Like, you've got to have, there has to be repercussions. Like, you know, games where you're playing and you know, there's nothing at stake, basically. So, like, the bottom teams in that group that were intending to play in the Super League, so them games, you know, nobody wants to watch them.
It seems, though, that there is an opinion starting to form now that it could just be put on hold for a while. So Sam Allardyce came out in his press conference today and he feels that it isn't the end of it. But when you think of the outrage and, as Dunica said a little bit earlier, the mobilisation of people, it is hard to see how they could float it again. But anything is possible, really, Gary.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, Sam Allardyce is probably right. I think, you know, they've probably learned a lot from, you know, the unveiling of this proposal, and now, like, you can be sure if there's money to be made, they'll be looking at, you know, a different route, you know, to the same thing basically. And yeah, look, I'd say it won't rear its head there for a little while, but I doubt we've seen the end of it.
Kerry, is it important now that there's sanctions for these teams, you know, that, or at least there's an agreement going forward that if they were to do something like this again, there would be sanctions in place, you know, that they maybe get one free run at it, but putting the whole game into jeopardy is a massive risk to everyone.
Absolutely. I think, you know, it's probably important that sanctions are put in place immediately, because then that really kind of stamps the authority on it, whether, you know, the footballing bodies in each country, and then you look at UEFA and FIFA. If they lay down a marker now and punish the clubs accordingly, whether it be, you know, that they don't play in European competitions for next season, well, that will kind of put a halt to it initially, and you know, there'll certainly be a massive rethink from all the clubs then.
There is football action tonight as well. You nearly forget that there's games on, but Spurs are playing Southampton. That kicked off at 6 o'clock, and Aston Villa and Manchester City at 8:15. And Gary, just, I know you're very involved in and have been very involved in players' unions. It was good to see the players stand up, though, as well, and be counted, to see the likes of Jordan Henderson mobilising the captains. And just, like, it was difficult for a lot of them to put their heads above the parapet and say what they were thinking. But some of them managed to do it and succeeded in many ways in influencing the decision to change things.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, that just goes to show the influence that players have. And look, it takes tremendous courage and bravery to do that as well, because like, you're basically going against your employers, the people who pay your wages, and that's always a difficult thing to do. So the players deserve huge credit, you know, for putting that together and putting their opinions out there. And, you know, the likes of Gary Neville and the other pundits that have spoken in depth about it, you know, like, they have been great in terms of putting, you know, the supporters and opinions out there as well. As there's been various demonstrations, as you know.
One of the roles I wouldn't have fancied was poor old Peter Cech having to get off the bus to get it through. Would you fancy that, Gary?
He need his helmet on for that one.
He certainly did.
And Gary, look, we're talking about off the field action quite a lot at the moment, but there is some here at home that is has been the subject of quite a lot of discussion and debate and interest too, and that is what's happening at Dundalk. So over the last few days as well, plenty has happened, although much of it has flown under the radar because of what was happening with the Super League. But look, we saw Shane Keegan depart. We saw Filippo Giovannoli also depart the club. There's no manager in there at the moment, no full-time manager, with Jim Magilton leading at the moment. But what's your thoughts, just as a former player, somebody that was so involved in the club, so involved in building the legacy, just to see the way things are now and how it's all playing out?
Yeah, it's hugely disappointing to see where it has gone, and it's probably not surprising from being on the inside, because you could have foreseen some of the stuff that's going on, you know, like, you know, the situation with the managers, with the farcical situation, you know, where, you know, one week you Filippo is the manager, and the next week Shane is the manager, and I don't think anyone was aware that Shane was going to be made manager at one stage, and all of a sudden there's a press conference saying he is. So like, that situation itself wasn't good for anybody, it wasn't good for players, and now you're in a situation there where it's back to the drawing board, and Jim really has to get this decision right. This is a massive decision and a very important one for the club. You know, it's still early in the season, there's 5 games gone, but you know, the appointment of manager is going to be crucial, and they really need to get it right.
What about the players in all this? We're talking about the importance of them and how key it can be to voice your opinion at the right time. How are they all coping?
Yeah, well, the players are in a tricky situation there, because all the players, nearly bar one player, I think, you know, all their contracts are all up. So, you know, it's a precarious position for players, and look, they don't really get too involved in the politics of what's going on within the club. You know, they'd be just hoping to get a manager in place. Obviously, one with a pro license would be a plus, because it takes away from the circus that has been going on around the place. And you know, there's plenty of good pro license candidates out there, you know, within this country and within the league, that would be, you know, available and suitable and know the league, and that would be a start to get somebody in there that knows the league, and you know, to get a leader, you know, for the players, you know, to basically get them going the right direction.
Gary, just on Marie's point there, it can be really unfair on players though, because everyone says, you know, they should come together now, they're a professional, and rally round, but you need the structures, you need someone to look up to and follow.
Absolutely. I've been thinking about it. I was thinking in 2 years ago when we were had a sticky patch in Dundalk, we had lost back-to-back games against St Pat's and Sligo, and you know, everyone was scratching their head and wondering what, you know, what was going to happen. But I remember Rory Higgins, who's involved with Stephen Kenny now as a coach, but Rory was assistant manager at the time, and you know, he kind of basically, you know, rallied the troops in the dressing room and told a few home truths, and I suppose got everyone back together, pushing in the one direction. And for me, you know, at that time, it stood out to me that Rory is a manager in the making, and he's on his pro licence now, and he would be, for me, an ideal candidate. Like, there's other really good candidates as well. Like, you know, I would be looking at the likes of Damien Duff or Tim Clancy that are out there. But people like that, you need a leader like that that's going to ruffle feathers and not afraid to make the tough decisions. And you know, Dundalk are crying out for leadership now, and they're going to really need a good manager in place in order to steer the ship where they need to go.
So you're thinking somebody like Tim Clancy, who's at Drogheda, or Damien Duff could be the candidates to do so?
Yeah, absolutely. I think so. Like, Tim Clancy's done a terrific job at Drogheda. I think, you know, you need to get somebody in place quickly as well. Drogheda United won't thank me for putting Tim's name forward, but it's just a personal opinion. I've just seen what Tim has done over the last 2 or 3 years. Obviously, I've worked with Rory Higgins at Dundalk. He knows the club. Damien Duff is, after coming out of the Irish setup, another guy with a pro licence, with huge career, terrific coach, has been involved with Celtic and Ireland. And they're just three candidates that I would think that the club should be going after, as opposed to waiting for CVs to come in. You should be targeting the sort of manager that you want and go out there and get them, because Dundalk, the club that it is and the stature that it is, it's playing in Europe year on year, and they need to be looking for really good appointments. And look, maybe just a couple of names that would spring to mind for myself.
So Drogheda United in fifth place, Tim Clancy leaving them, going to Dundalk, who are currently in eighth. Do you think so, Gary?
Well, look, I'm taking Tim's job. Like, you look at what he's done in 3 years off like a shoestring budget, and he's doing the pro license. But I'd be kind of look. You look at Damien Duff. He's coaching now at Shelburne. Like, there's plenty of candidates out there that'd be well fit to do the job. You know, it's like, you know, the two boys came in from America last time, and you know, we're thrown in at the deep end there. They swam, they got us the Europa League and the FAI Cup win, but look, it hasn't worked out. And look, you need to get, and fundamental to that was the pro license situation, where the manager couldn't be on the sideline and couldn't do media interviews, and his hands were basically tied behind his back. So you need to get a man in place with a pro license.
I'd imagine, though, if you think of somebody like Damien Duff and just how frustrated he can get if things aren't done certain ways, that he might struggle with the chaos that seems to be behind the scenes at Dundalk.
Yeah, well, look, look, you've got Jim McGilton there now, who's basically the sporting director. So it's his job to kind of divert that away. Whereas I think if you let the likes of Damien in there to do the job and to do the day-to-day managing of the players, and let him do that and do it properly, I think he'd be more than capable. Like you say, look, these decisions have to be made. But there's, like I said, there's plenty of good people out there, good football people out there that would be, I suppose, really interested in the job and well capable of doing it.
And Gary, we've been talking quite a lot about ownership structures and focused on the super clubs, obviously. But just when you look at Dundalk and the setup there, would you have concerns about the future of the club with the current ownership model that they have in place there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think everyone has got concerns about it. I think when you look at, I suppose, if you take the contract into consideration, you know, you could... The fact that they're only 1 year contracts, you know, that's lessening the liability for the club. So, like, who's to say that, you know, that the owners are not, you know, thinking of pulling out at the end of the season, which would be a fear for obviously players and the club. So, like, you just don't know, you know, what if they don't achieve, say, European success this year, or they don't qualify for Europe next year, who's to say that the club don't pull the plug?
Gary, it's a worrying time. Third from bottom, you know how passionate Dundalk supporters are. They'll be worried, won't they?
Absolutely. I think, you know, there's huge worry out there, because, you know, the squad that they've assembled, there's a massive squad of players there, hugely talented players. So, like, it's, you know, the talent is there. It's about getting the right man in charge to steer it. And the, you know, the players are probably anxious. Supporters are certainly anxious. And you know, off to a really poor start, which, you know, you're giving Shamrock Rovers and Sligo and Pats a massive lead. And, you know, it's difficult. The league is very competitive this year. I was at Bowes and Sligo last night, and two really, really good teams playing really good football. And just Dundalk are really struggling for that confidence. And, you know, you need that leadership at the top in order to be competitive, because it is a very competitive league. You've got to bring your A game every week if you're going to be winning it.
Or if you're Shamrock Rovers, you could just score a really late goal every week, Gary.
Yeah, sign of a good side. Like, they really haven't probably played as well as they would like. But, you know, they're probably benefiting from probably not too much change. Like, they've lost Jack and Aaron McAniff. But, you know, they've brought in quality players like Chris McCann, Danny Mandrew, Sean Gannon, Sean Hoare. So they've strengthened, and they haven't probably hit top form yet, but, you know, they're chalking off the wins. They're top of the table with Sligo and Pats, and you know, although they haven't played really well, they're there where they want to be. And, you know, I think, you know, the league possibly, you know, it'll be there for the take. And I think if they hit a rich vein of form, I don't see the dog catching them.
Sligo have got out, you mentioned them there, they've got out to a great start, haven't they? A good win last night, 3-1 against Bowes.
Yeah, no, they've had a brilliant start, but they've a really good side there. Liam Buckley has done a great job there, and he's kind of steadied the ship over the last couple of years, and he's a very solid back four, good goalkeeper. He brought in Greg Bulger from Shamrock Rovers, has really added a lot to them in the midfield, and they have a very dynamic front three or four, if you like, with young Johnny Kenny, 17-year-old, leading the line up there with a great pace, and Jordan Gibson has been flying this season as well. So I think the only issue that Sligo will have will be, you know, the size of their squad. If they can keep their players fit, you know, they've got a real chance of having a really good season and picking up some silverware possibly.
Okay, thanks so much, Gary Rogers. I have to say it has been an entertaining start to the season anyway, for lots of reasons. Thanks so much for joining us. We will chat to you again soon. We're going to take a very quick break, and then John Conlon, Claire Hurler joins us.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now, for anyone who might have missed the top of the show, we are giving away a Green Farm food hamper on the show tonight. So please get in your questions to us for our nutritionist, Orla Walsh, who will answer them all. And then Donica will pick his favourite question and pick a winner. So anyway, we're talking about why or how important it is to fuel yourself right when you get back training. Well, all of our inter-county GAA players have returned to training, and I'm delighted to say that John Conlon is with us now on the line. Claire Hurler, John, you're back training. So we're talking about food. What is your go-to meal for when you're training?
I suppose I love turkey, stir-fry with turkey, with some brown rice, I suppose. That's kind of my go-to, kind of a curry. And but if I was in a match, yeah, I suppose I'd like to take some porridge before a match as well. So something to just keep me light going into a game or training.
To be fair, porridge is rocket fuel. Are you handy in the kitchen, John?
Yeah, I must say, no, I love to cook, and I really like to experiment with different meals and making different power bars and power balls and stuff like that. So, yeah, look, I wouldn't say I'm fantastic. I wouldn't be the best to tidy up now in the kitchen, but I'd be good to try out stuff and make different things.
We know everyone's been finding different ways to interact and socialise together. Is that something you've been doing with Zoom classes, you know, nutrition or just even training, stuff like that, making it a bit competitive among your squad?
Yeah, look, we've kind of a WhatsApp group, and our nutritionist, Lexi, would be trying her best to try and get us going and try and put up different meals and try to help us out. And yeah, look, it's all about trying to engage at the moment up to last night when we got back together. But I suppose through Zoom and just texting each other and WhatsApp and stuff. But yeah, look, it was difficult, but we were trying to keep everyone entertained and keep them socialising and engaging with each other.
So, John, it's actually almost a year to the day when we spoke to you last, and we were just kind of starting to experience the pandemic and lockdown, and we had no idea what was coming down the track with the coronavirus. But you had just done your cruciate at that time, so obviously you had to rehab it over the last number of months. What was the last year like for you, just kind of dealing with the pandemic and dealing with an injury and having to make it better?
Yeah, it was difficult because the long road, as you said, it was over 12 months now since I had a first contact session last night, which was really enjoyable. I was like a kid going out for the first time playing sport again. It was difficult the last few months. I suppose gym was closed and I didn't have really the access to gyms that I would like and facilities, but I suppose I was lucky that I had a lot of the equipment myself at home. I transformed the garage into kind of as good a gym as I could make it, which I kind of looked at more of an investment into the future and enjoy doing the gym and working out. So, yeah, so it was kind of more an investment I saw it and putting a few grand into it, and I see a lot of other players put in that into it as well. And a lot of our care lads would have done the same thing. So, I found that enjoyable, and just setting out my goals and, you know, having smaller goals and then building those into big goals, which, you know, I kind of ticked off the list last night then, and getting back into training and engaging with the lads and trying to do my best and really try and come back as strong and as fierce as I've ever been. And that was my kind of goal at the end of the day. Just listening to different people like Tom Parsons and getting information from, you know, lads that there that might have done the cruiser as well, or even engaging with, you know, I used to text Richie English over and back, who'd done it as well, so I just engaging with other county players, and you know, all trying to help each other out, and you know, you don't like to see anyone injured, and we all wish each other to, you know, the best to get back in the field. So yeah, it's been a year of kind of reflection, and I suppose when you hit 30, a lot of people keep asking the question of when you're retiring, like, and which isn't the best question. Maybe it gets into your head at times, but it gave me time to reflect and see what I really wanted to do, and you know, maybe get other injuries that I had niggles with my back and stuff on top of them. And look, I feel great now. I feel revitalized. And you know, I suppose when you're missing something and away from something, you get that love of it back. And you know, I said to myself that I'm going to enjoy all the last few years that I have with Clare and with my club, and just enjoy being able to compete and engage and you know, the challenge of playing against other players is, you know, and that's what I'm going to enjoy for the next few years.
John, it's always a special moment when one of your teammates comes back from injury, but for all of you to, like you said, like a spring lamb, be unleashed on the pitch last night, it must have been an incredible buzz.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't have said that now for the first time with a fitness test, so I think there's a lot of lads really nervous, but yeah, look, it was, you know, as I described it last year, even with our own club players and doing that, it was like letting cattle out for the first time out of the shed, so you know, they were, yeah, like we were all rusty, and you know, we have a lot of training done over the last number of weeks and number of months, but really enjoyable just to engage with lads again, have the chat, see how they are. Some lads with very dodgy haircuts and some lads with really long hair like myself, so yeah, it was great to see lads and get that social engagement again, and just get that competition back and competitiveness, you know, that you miss, and yeah, it was really enjoyable.
And John, just from the injury point of view, because obviously it's an injury that the cruciate is one that a lot of people do, and not everybody is in an intercounty setup. Some of them are just regular club players, and some of them aren't even players at all, and they do their cruciate. But when you were going back, that first contact session, how were you feeling about it?
I was really nervous, and we put 12 months into something to get back into the field, and that first case, you know, it was, you know, you would be nervous about going back into it, and you know, the first, I just high-stepped one, the lad lettered me into the knee, and that kind of took it all out of it, if I meant to take Adam and take anything. So then from then on, I didn't notice the thing. I was just jumping into tackles and doing different things. But yeah, like, you would be nervous. You would be, you know, because you don't want to go down that road again. And anyone that has had a long-term injury, you know, that first night or two, they're going to be apprehensive. But yeah, at least I had that out of the way now, and that's another box ticked. And yeah, I'm just really looking forward to having a good year going forward with Clare and then with my club.
It's nice to be here talking about training, and we will be talking about upcoming matches shortly, but for the last number of weeks and nearly months at this stage, John, a lot of the focus on Clare Hurling has surrounded off the field issues, mostly finances and facilities. As a player and as a group of players, has it been difficult to focus on trying to do your own bits when there has been so much outside noise about what is going on in the admin side of things?
Yeah, look, as players, I suppose we hadn't been kind of in contact with each other collectively and hadn't been training, so we hadn't been able to talk about it. But personally, I suppose it's not a nice thing to hear and read about, and look, we'd prefer to not see their GA splattered across the newspapers the whole time and the last number of weeks. But look, we won't beat around the bush. Like, the current structures aren't perfect. I suppose there isn't many counties that you can say that they're perfect. But look, it's positive news in the last number of weeks. Like, that, so the new committee is in place, and a very astute kind of their business people and their GA people, and it's up to us as supporters, I suppose, and players and coaches and everyone within their GA circles to back them and see what recommendations they come back with and what plans they put in place for the next 5-10 years, because like, as a county, you know, we're very ambitious and we want to strive to stay at the kind of top where we kind of are, John, and the footballers have come on massively, and you know, the hurling, like, we haven't won an All-Ireland since 2013, and we want to get back there and get all our underage teams performing at the top level in both codes, and I think it's, you know, it's very important that we back that committee and as a county board and as players and everyone, that we all strive just to be the best as we can be on the field of play and off the field of play. And I suppose in the last number of weeks, it was very positive, you know, to see the relaunch as well of the Clare GA and Supporters Club Clare for the hurlers and Camogie players, and they've raised over 100,000. So, you know, you can see that the support that is there from supporters by raising that money over the last number of weeks, and that'll go towards the development of all underage teams and senior teams and Camogie teams in Clare, and I hope all supporters will back it. So, you know, they're very positive things going forward. So hopefully
they absolutely are, John. But you are in your career right now, so we can look to the future all we want. But I think the reality is that people want you to start winning All Irelands now, because, you know, they feel that the players are there. But do you feel that you have enough supports in place now? Like, we know there's been so much focus on Carhartt and I guess what's not in Carhartt. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, like from a player's point of view, like in terms of the management and Brian having putting all the ducks in a row and all the resources there for us to perform, like I can't say that they're not there. So in fairness to Brian, he's done his utmost to get funding whatever way it means possible, and back us with everything, and I can say this with my hand to my heart that Brian has been super and his management team to put everything in place for us as players, so I can't, and from the county board, so I can't give out about that. Like in terms of Carhartt, I suppose from a player's point of view, like in 2012 when that first opened, it was a very exciting project. You know, it was a massive step forward from where we were, and look, it took a lot of forward thinking from the county board to buy such a facility and start developing it. But those, I suppose, plans and visions like haven't fully materialised. So it's 9 years since, it's 2021 now. Like, and you know, not much has changed, I suppose, with that centre of excellence. And when you think of a centre of excellence, you know, I think of like Pat the Offaly one before Christmas, and just to see the facilities that they have, and you see the ones in Tyrone and different places like that. And you know, when a centre of excellence was to kind of inspire the youth and inspire us to want to play for Clare, and that's the way I'd look at a centre of excellence, that, you know, it's a high performance there at centre, and you know, currently that isn't up to standard, and you know, the county board would admit that, and they've admitted that in county board meetings as well. So look, they put a committee in place at the start of the year, and hopefully that committee now can drive forward and bring that up to the standard of, you know, that we have proper playing facilities and proper playing fields to use all year round, and if we have a proper gym to use, and, you know, that players underage and senior players, both hurling and football, you know, have a place that they can call home and really enjoy it and love going there. So that's the way I'd look at it going forward.
And have you confidence in the current county board that they will be able to do this, that they will be able to put this in place, John?
Well, I hope with the new committee, like that, the new committee that's put in place, that, you know, they've sent out service to all the players and all supporters, and that'll be their plan to get the playing facilities, obviously, in Carhartt up to the standard that are required. So I'm hopeful that this committee, and that we'd all back it, from supporters to players to coaches to the county board, and that we all drive on as one and really just make, you know, Clare GA an enjoyable and very pleasant experience for all.
Yeah, and that it's match reports that we're reading about the Clare hurlers again, hopefully very soon, because and we will be, because you're due to start the league soon, and we have a Munster Championship draw as well with Waterford as the first game up.
Yeah, look, we played Waterford in the quarter final last year and beat us by a few points in the end, but look, they had a great year last year. We were disappointed, you know, to lose to Waterford, but seeing them going to All Ireland then gave us hope that, well, we're not that far away. Hopefully I'll be injury free and be back in the field this year, and Colin Galvin's back training as well. So we've a few lads to add to it. A lot of lads that got exposure to intercounty games last year are there again this year and have a year under their belt. So look, seeing lads back at training last night, and everyone seems to be in good shape and looking forward to having an exciting summer, and you know, looking forward to taking on Waterford and you know, meeting that challenge on a tight rating.
And if anybody wants to check out Club Clare, John, where can they do it?
So they can check it out through online with Club Clare, and also on Instagram and Twitter, and then they can join the Club Clare through that. But it was a massive step going forward, and it's very positive to see the amount of people that support in the last number of weeks.
That's for sure. John Conlon, thanks so much for joining us, and best of luck for the season ahead.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, with thanks to our fantastic sponsors, Green Farm, we're delighted to be joined by dietitian Orla Walsh. Orla, how are you?
Good, thanks for having me on.
Oh no, thanks for joining us. We have a lot of people either in the cars on the way back training or find some way to get back and out on the pitches, and we've been putting it to them to get their questions into 51552 to encourage them to do it. We've a brilliant goodie bag ram full of brilliant Green Farm products, so hopefully they will. But Orla, you might take us through the big rocks. What's really important for people to get right for performance, true nutrition as they return to play?
Well, I would focus on keeping it very simple. So most people would benefit from maybe 4 meals a day, so breakfast, lunch, dinner and supper. That they're spreading out their nutrients across the day. I'd encourage people to make sure that they're getting enough protein at each of their meals. So most people need 20 to 40 grams. 20 grams is generally plenty for most people, and if they spread out the protein across the 4 meals, then I'd encourage them to focus on the meals before and after training and make sure that they're higher in carbohydrates. So jam loads of carbohydrates with those protein sources before and after training, and then the other meals you need carbohydrate, but you probably don't need as much, so focus a little bit more on maybe fat sources at those meals, but certainly make every meal colourful, so lots of fruit and vegetables and things like that.
Sinead Ward has sent us in a question, and it is about protein, and I know you just mentioned it there, but she's wondering how much should you have ideally after a workout for optimum recovery, and should you have it straight away after the workout, or is it okay to have it in that 2-hour window?
Yeah, so I think people are really kind of nervous about getting that protein in straight out of after exercise. And the good news is there's not so much of a protein window. There's a carbohydrate window in that you have to get the carbs in as quickly as possible when you finish. But the protein, you really just need it in 4 hits a day, maybe 5 if you're pushing it. But you can only shove so much protein into your muscles every few hours. So once she's getting protein at each of her meals, then that will be plenty. How you calculate how much you need depends on what size you are. So most people, if they were to get their weight in kilograms and divide it by 3 or divide it by 4, that's kind of the range that they're looking at. So for easy math, if she was 80 kilos and she would need maybe 20 to 30 grams of protein at each of her meals, and that's plenty.
Orla, just what are the common mistakes you see with people looking to, get back to high performance? What are the things that you've seen over your time, the little mistakes they make?
Well, I think the biggest mistake has to be that people try and do too much, and they stress themselves out far too much. So, for example, when people want to get healthy, they spend far too much time prepping food and chopping and all the rest, and they don't actually use the kind of easier stuff that make life a lot simpler when you're trying to get healthy. You know, so healthy stuff that is already prepared is really, really helpful. So, for example, you know, using a lot more frozen veg and frozen fruit is a really good idea because there's less prep involved. Or even, you know, the healthier versions of the packaged meats and things. Like, they are very healthy and they are very helpful. And I think, you know, when people are trying to turn around from an unhealthy path to a healthier one, or else they're just trying to get healthy, they put too much effort in and it's not sustainable. So I would encourage people to go for the healthy, the healthy helpers with regards to the food.
Okay. Orla, we have a question in here from Christina Murphy on 51552. She is wondering, what is the best food to maintain good gut health?
Well, gut health, there's lots involved, but by far the biggest impactor is the diversity of plants you eat. So So it's really important. I think a good rule of thumb is to eat 30 different plants a week. So that's different fruits, vegetables, carbohydrates, nuts, seeds, and mix it up as much as possible. And again, I couldn't stress it even more, like the frozen stuff, for example, it's dead handy and is available and a great option. So it doesn't have to be complicated. So that's really important, diversity of plants. But I suppose, I don't know if you were actually, Duncan, involved in the study where, with the IRFU, where they actually took stool samples and the athletes had a really good microbiota. It was very diverse, and it's probably the amount you guys eat, but it's also probably the rolling around in mud.
Yeah, so I would,
I would say, so I'd encourage people to get back in nature as much as possible, because that can help. Stay away from pollution as much as possible, and don't smoke, limit alcohol, and, you know, try and sleep well and reduce your stress, and all of those things help as well.
We have another question in here from Veronica Fitzgerald. Her husband has been walking for at least an hour a day since Christmas. He's not a great lover of vegetables. He's lost a couple of pounds, but he's no plateauing in his weight. Yeah. What would you recommend?
That's super common. So what I'd encourage first off is just make sure he's not getting hungry, because if you get hungry, you snack on things that are less healthy. So again, what satisfies hunger levels is protein and fiber. So make sure you're getting plenty of protein, like maybe every 3 to 4 hours, and make sure you're eating lots of different fruit and veg. So aim for around 2 portions of fruit and veg in each meal. For him, you know, I would hide veg as much as possible. You know, little things like putting all red veg into a blender and mixing that in with the meat sauce, or you like the spaghetti bolognese, or the likes of things like cauliflower rice and broccoli rice. They're helpful, because if it's a, what I would describe, or what my uncle describes as a wet meal, you know, meals with sauces or gravies and stuff, you won't actually notice if they're mixed in with your rice or your grain, because the sauces will take over. So I would hide as much fruit and veg in there as possible. And but keep trying it, because things that we thought we didn't like when we were younger, if you keep trying it, you will eventually like it. I work in a nursing home sometimes, and you know, there's people rediscovering food after 60 years, and they were like, I thought I hated this. So our taste buds do change with time.
Now, I did mention a little bit earlier that there is football on tonight. It is halftime in the Spurs-Southampton game, and Southampton are winning that one 1-0. And also in the Women's Super League game, Chelsea and Manchester City are in action right now. It is a top of the table clash, and Chelsea are leading there 2-1. Karen Harder with the Chelsea goals and Kelly with the Manchester City goal. Now, the texts are still coming in. Lots of questions about this. People are really curious. And one that does come up quite a bit, Orla, is weight loss. And what is the best thing to eat for weight loss?
Well, I would focus on what we call, you know, low calorie to, it's called volume eating. So if I were to, how would I describe it? Okay, so a toast, picture a slice of bread with butter on it, delicious. But that has the same amount of calories as 3 eggs. So what I'd encourage people to focus on is filling foods that are low calorie but high volume. So you're thinking about vegetables, of course, but also lean meat, dairy, especially milk and yogurt, and things like eggs. So if you focus on foods that have low calories but are nice and filling, and they'll fill you up because they're bulky, and they'll fill you up because you know, they're made of they're good protein and fiber sources. If you focus on that, that's helpful when you're trying to reduce your weight.
Orla, we've a tweet in here from Paul Maher. He is 50 plus, 6'4", about 15 stone, 4 pounds, male obviously, and he's training aerobically 4 times a week. He's looking to have more energy because he wants to move up from 5Ks to 10Ks. What type of nutrition would be good for that?
Okay, so what I'd encourage for him is it's about recovery, because if he recovers well, he can do more and he'll feel like he can do more. And so what I would actually introduce, if he isn't already doing it, is a protein hit before bed. So that has been shown to help with recovery and increasing muscle mass, which helps people lean up. But it also can help with hunger and satiety. So I would encourage them to take a protein hit before bed. I wouldn't discourage the likes of whey proteins and creatines and stuff like that. They're very helpful. And unfortunately, you know, when it comes to science, it's offensive. You know, 50, anything above 40, you need a little bit more tweaking in your nutrition, because unfortunately you're considered an older athlete. So I would encourage him to make sure he's getting the protein hits, get a big protein hit before bed, consider whey protein, maybe one scoop or two scoops after he trains, and also consider the likes of creatine, just to help him out in terms of you know, what he can expect from his muscles.
Orla, fantastic stuff. We've loads more coming in. We'll pick a winner for our brilliant Green Farm goodie bag. But thank you so much. If you'd like to get in contact with Orla Walsh, you can find her at orlawalshnutrition.ie. Thanks, Orla.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Now we are turning our attention to cricket, and the YMCA Cricket Club has called Claremount Road in Sandymouth their home since 1911. The club, however, leases the land from Dublin YMCA, but this arrangement is now under threat as the charity has announced its intention to sell the facility to the highest bidder. And former Irish cricketer and rugby referee Alan Lewis is with us to explain the situation to us. Alan, you're very welcome to the show. How have you got to this point?
If I knew the answer to that, Marie, I'd have an understanding. It's very, very difficult. As you say, we've been on the ground since 1911. Things changed about 20 years ago, and there was a redevelopment on the ground that still facilitated a modern facility on the ground, but probably relationships with the City of Dublin YMCA from that point on became much more difficult. As a cricket club, you know, we serve not just cricket, we serve the community of Sandymount, schools, everything that goes with it. And even more importantly, that it's a home for Irish international cricket, Irish women's international cricket in particular. And we had great plans for Claremont Road. The City of Dublin YMCA really didn't even have the decency to enter into any dialogue with us. They gave us 36 hours notice to effectively say, we're selling to the highest bidder and off with you.
It just seems so crazy, really, when you think about sport and how important it is and how embedded clubs are in communities and how valuable they are to the people that are around there, just even given the times that we're in. But when you look at a club like YMCA and some of the things you mentioned there as well, just developing players, just the importance of the club and the community, and it's not just for cricket, it's for everybody around, Alan. How big a blow would it be to everyone to lose this?
Well, our issue is a cricket issue, but you've quite rightly said, Marie, this is an issue for sport around the country of Ireland. We, like no different to any other clubs, Johnny Watterson did an article, former international hockey player, we have children on waiting lists to come and play cricket because there isn't facilities in the area. Great communication facilities. They come by dark, by train from Kildare. We have diversity. We have boys and girls. There's a program that's gone out on Cricket Ireland Twitter today showing exactly what we do. And we're no different to every other voluntary sport in the country that does these sorts of things. And really, you know, it's shameful that a charity like the YMCA could even think of doing those. So we have admiration for the activities that they do in the inner city of Dublin. They have other fixed assets, but they have little or no respect, I don't think, for what we do in Sandymount and serving the community. As I say, we have old age people who come in, can walk safely around paths, enjoy watching cricket. We serve all the schools in the area, bringing cricket to, and no different to other clubs in the Sandymount area. But the demand for cricket is huge, and even more importantly now, even within Cricket Ireland's strategic document, women's cricket, with a home for women's international cricket, it would be a travesty if this ground went to the highest bidder. And as Johnny said, you can have a price for everything, but a value of nothing, and that's the way it sickens me, to be honest.
So Catherine Romani, who's CEO of YMCA in Dublin, she has outlined her and the charity's rationale behind the sales. They are saying that it would allow the organisation to expand its charitable activities in those areas which are disadvantaged in Dublin, and the move will put the not-for-profit organisation in the fortunate position of being largely self-sufficient from government funding, which is all fair enough. But obviously, as well, it does... the removal of YEA from the ground does impact your area too, which is very important to the local community there. And Alan, how close is this to happening? Like, is this a done deal?
Well, sadly, we don't know that. Sadly, in any sort of commercial decency, you would like to think after 110 years of occupation, you might get more than 36 hours notice to tell you of their plans. We don't have... we have a lease, as I say, arrangement with them, which they said they weren't continuing and want us to sign a deed of renunciation to come out of the ground. And realistically, having invested as heavily we have in the facility over the last particular 20 years, we're the current All-Ireland champions. We've got a fantastic youth section, three international players on the current Irish team. You know, it's a scandal, really, and many, many youth internationals. But more importantly, we have... cricketers coming to us that are enjoying the game, growing in the game, boys and girls, ethnic diversity, everything. We serve everything in the community. And even in my time there, things like Paralympic soccer teams have come down and trained in the other. We're welcoming of anyone. And we have great plans for Claremont Road for a community facility. We didn't even get a hearing.
You're hurt by this, Alan. I know you well. I know how much it means to you. Sport is really important, but this is a fundamental. It's a club. It's where you've mentioned where we have diversity, where we also welcome people. It's really important to you.
Well, sport is so... Look, don't you, it would be exactly the same for you. You've been in Temple Hill with your family since the age of 8. And if someone came in and gave you 36 hours notice as All-Ireland champions to tell you to get out after that tenure, you'd feel as sick as I am. And quite honestly, sport is too important for me for so many reasons. This isn't just about sport. It's about the development of people. And it's about the development of a culture and serving people within a community. And it smacks in the face of all the issues that they put forward in their triangle of the YMCA of what they serve, what they've done here. And really, you know, they get a significant amount of government funding. And really... within that, I think government, politicians, people have to stop this.
Alan, we have had some texts in here supporting your cause. If people do want to find out more information, how they can help, is there a place that they can go?
Well, they can obviously log on. We are working on facts and figures here. Again, in terms of sport, I suppose what we could do is we could march on Ainger Street. They could join in the march. We saw what it did for Connacht Rugby, Donegal.
And we've seen
the growth of what's happened in Connacht, and with the wrong decision, but the people of Connacht rose up and they came on Lansdowne Road, and the right decision was made. And I think what we've got to do, we've got to make sure for sports people, for children anywhere, I don't care what the sport is, but they've got to have facilities. And to see a city centre, South City location going to the fortunes of a developer, I'm sorry, it's wrong.
Alan, thanks so much. Hopefully we'll catch up soon. We wish you all the best. Like you said, Connacht Rugby mobilised, and we've seen that even this week, how people can find their voice and help out a little bit more. We really appreciate it. Before we go, we have a winner for our brilliant Green Farm hamper. That is Christine Murphy. Christine, we'll be on and get all that fantastic hamper to you. That's it from us. Myself and Marie are back tomorrow at 6. The brilliant Tara Stewart's up next.